And welcome. My name is Mark Cunaberti to another edition of your Economic Forum entitled Money Matters. Discussions in the show should not be construed as a specific recommendation or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Keep in mind, indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Welcome to the 295th show, Falling into Fall. Will the markets fall? Money Matters is about money. As money as matter, and matters money affects us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, and in some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about your life, our lives, and our livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. Okay, so we'll take care of the markets. Yeah, well, we had 27,000 something. Getting close to an all-time high. We popped an all-time high. And then now we're down, somewhere around 1,200 points in the last couple of weeks. Down to 26,152 on the Dow. There are other indices that we follow, but basically people usually watch the Dow. Yeah, so it's at 26,152. And as always in every show, we always describe the resistance and support levels on the Dow. And, of course, at 26,152, the technical analysts who believe such things will look at 26,000. Remember, we're at 26,152, at 26,000 below us as a support level. And the larger number above us, 27,000, would be a resistance level. Now, the technocrats will always look at different smaller numbers in between then, but they basically agree that the larger numbers are support and resistance levels. Of course, a real big one would be 20,000, wouldn't it? And, of course, another resistance level would be 30,000 above us. So at 26,164, I guess the question is, will it go below 26,000? That's a support level. Of course, if it does do that, go below 26,000 and closes that way for the day, the technocrats believe that that's not such a good sign. If it closes that way for the week on Friday, then they would say that that was also a more of an ominous sign, of course. And, of course, nobody can tell where markets will go at any one time. Not I, not anyone. But the technocrats believe such things. And do they have any valid? Sure, I think they do. But, the markets basically reflect all the opinions of everybody in the market at any one time. The markets will reflect reality eventually. But it's day-to-day movements we can sometimes call noise, or we can sometimes call the culmination of all the opinions of all the players in the market on the given day. What caused the recent setback? We lost somewhere around 1,200 points in the last couple of days. And that was because we had GDP growth numbers come out. Now, they come out every quarter. Of course, we know what they are every month. But the big ones that everybody looks at is every quarter. And they have a number on GDP, which is the number is 50. Anything over 50 signifies growth. Anything under 50 signifies contraction. So we did, the numbers were expected to be around 51. Last quarter, they were around 53-something. They were expected to come in around 51. The lowest estimate was a 49-something, and it came in at 47, which indicated contraction in the economy. Now, we haven't seen that since 2009, that particular number. And so that was significant. It was followed by, of course, talks by, the people that talk about such things on CNBC, that a recession was coming because of what we call an inverted yield curve. Of course, we won't get into that today. We covered that many, many times. But the inverted yield curve did invert. There was talk about a recession, but then Wall Street kind of blew it off. They figured recessions usually happen between 12 and 18 months after the yield curve inverts. And so they kind of blew that off. And then, of course, now we see contraction in the last quarter. Now, the belief is that we're seeing the tariffs take hold. That, we're seeing now the tariffs have finally taken a bite out of earnings. Now, if we have three quarters of contraction in a row under 50, then that is the definition of recession. So market didn't like that. So we'll see what's going to happen. GDP numbers, it's one thing that many of us look at. Economic numbers are really, you know, still quite good. Unemployment numbers are really, really low. And employment numbers, obviously, the converse of that, are really high. And so we'll see. We'll see. Dow's up 80 today. We'll see if that's going to end the recent three-day route or two-day route that we saw because of the contraction in the GDP numbers. So we'll see. People are definitely on edge for sure. So we'll keep an eye on it for you. Okay, so 295, falling in the fall. Will the markets fall? We'll talk about that in a little bit. Of course, we do have a kind of a offshoot of this show called Investing in Community. And in Investing in Community, we don't talk about money. We talk about things like investing in your body, in your mind, in your garden, in your car, in your home. You know, a lot of things that you can invest in and basically get a return. Reinvesting basically means you do something of an expectation of a future occurrence. So when I plant seeds, I think that a garden is going to grow. And when I eat well, I think I'm going to be healthy. And we talk about nonprofits and politics here. We've interviewed a number of politicians on the show. And so today in Investing in Community, we're going to talk about investing in your body. And I've brought in a guest today, Mr. Jack Emery, physical therapist. So we're going to talk about investing in your body. Jack, good morning.
How about good afternoon?
It's good afternoon. Yeah, show starts at noon, ends at 1.
Good to be here.
All right, physical therapist, eh?
Yes.
All right. Okay, so I'm sure many of you are familiar with physical therapy. So, Jack, tell us, you know, I understand you're going to retire pretty soon, but tell us how you got to where you are in your career.
Well, I started out learning about physical therapy while I backed in Pennsylvania, and then I became very much interested in becoming one and proceeded the educational process. I'd had 4 years of college and then went on to Cal State Northridge and finished up with a physical therapy curriculum there. So, and I've been in practice in California and Arizona since 1975. So I've got a lot of experience.
You don't look a day over 30.
Thank you.
All right. I met Jack just a couple of weeks ago doing physical therapy. So, Jack, physical therapy, what is it?
Well, it has a lot of different venues, but most people are familiar with physical therapy in the setting of orthopedics, doing with bones and joints and muscles and backs and necks and elbows and knees, that sort of thing. There's a lot of physical therapy that's done specifically in neurological areas. That could be a stroke. That could be a balance issue. It could be a spinal cord injury. So there's a lot of neurological physical therapy. And then it has a realm of other settings. We have specialists in pelvic floor issues, problems with the bottom of the pelvis, and specialists in that area. Physical therapists that specialize in sports medicine, which is a lot of interest and very exciting area. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's how much opportunity. We'd all like to do that because that's a fun area. Mm-hmm. Other therapists in in using diagnostic tools to help come up with what's going on with the body. Others in research and education. So it's a lot of things depending on what hat you're wearing. My specialty has always been orthopedics, although we have therapists in our office that specialize in pelvic floor, balance, and in neurologic areas. So lots of areas.
You know, people go to chiropractors, and they go to acupuncturists and cupping, and they go to bone therapy, and a whole line of body dressment techniques. Does physical therapy, does it sometimes, or can it address internal? Somebody maybe has some digestive problems or something of that. Does it bleed into that?
That's a stretch for most of us. There are manual therapists that maybe say that you could do something that way, but certainly not mainstay of physical therapy.
Okay, we're speaking to Jack Emery, physical therapist, about investing in our body. So I guess you could say, when is physical therapy used and why, kind of in a nutshell?
Physical therapy is used to improve a specific function of the body, whether it's a joint that's limited or a muscle or a neurological problem where you're not walking right because of in proper training. Most of our efforts are have something to do with movement in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Either we're moving you or you're moving you in some way to improve the function. A lot of our patients are specifically seeing us for orthopedic problems, specifically mm-hmm. a knee that's not working, a back that's painful, a neck that's painful, a balance disorder. They're having a hard time climbing the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Those sorts of things are very much part of what we do, we see day to day.
Is it ever used? I know it is commonly used to address something that is happened, but is it ever used as a preventative measure? Like, there's nothing wrong with me, but I'm going to come see you anyway.
We do get that. Mm-hmm. Patients will come in and say, you know, I want to get stronger. I want to be able to mm-hmm. do this. I want to improve in this function or skill. I want to be better golfer. I mean, there's mm-hmm. a lot of therapists that are involved in that area. I want to be better at throwing. Yes, that happens, but most people are coming to us with a problem they want to get an answer for.
Mm-hmm. Can one do physical therapy on their own? I guess that would kind of put you out of a job in some cases, what do you see?
Interesting. My boss, John Sievert, mm-hmm. recently did a presentation on being your own physical therapist. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot, because a lot of what we do is education, teaching people what to do, and then they follow through with that.
So somebody comes to you, and when you first evaluate them, can you tell how long they're going to be with you as a general rule? Or I would imagine in extreme cases you could.
Well, usually there's a goal, what we want to accomplish in a prescribed period of time, and usually put some time restraints on that.
Mm-hmm.
But we're surprised sometimes. Sometimes it takes one visit. Sometimes it takes several months.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it all depends.
Okay. Do you ever have people that do, you know, I do physical therapy in the gym myself for all things that have happened to me
right.
and that are still happening that I want to improve. So I guess I could say I'm a lifelong, physical therapist on myself. Do you get people that continually just keep coming back?
No, not generally. Usually mm-hmm. there's an end to a treatment period, although the door is always open for a return if that thing mm-hmm. flares up again.
Sure.
That happens a lot. We'll see people multiple times over years, and being a therapist for a while, I said, oh, there's a return customer with a different problem this time, or mm-hmm. a reoccurrence of the old problem.
Sure. Is a lot of it, I know some of it is accident related. How much of it, percentage wise, is age related? Just somebody says, you know, I didn't have a wreck, I didn't fall down, I didn't blow my knee out, I'm just stiff.
And I have a hard time putting numbers on that.
Mm-hmm.
But in our community, because we're an aging population, more and more of us, we're seeing a lot of age-related things, rather mm-hmm. than the arthritis in the knee or, boy, my back's getting sore and it's mm-hmm. wear and tear, and give them some pointers of what they can do to minimize and to control those symptoms.
Okay, this is Mark Cunabretti listening to Money Matters right here. We're on the special offshoot of Investing in Community. We're speaking to Jack Emery, a physical therapist, licensed physical therapist, like forever.
Yes.
Right? 85, 95, 2005, 44 years.
Getting there.
Getting there.
You know, and I looked back and I said, you know, what we did back in 1975,
mm-hmm.
that was stupid. Okay, and now I look back and I look at the therapist, you know, we're going to say the same thing in another 44 years from now, what we did. So things are constantly...
Yeah, I was going to say, is it changing?
It's changing. It continues to change. There has to be evidence for everything we do now. And the mm-hmm. research that's ongoing to prove that these techniques that we're using are effective and meaningful and appropriate mm-hmm. for that individual and his problem.
To be a physical therapist nowadays, what's the requirement?
Well, you get your bachelor's and then you get your doctorate in physical therapy.
Is that required for every physical therapist?
Yes, that is the standard now.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it with a master's and some other postgraduate programs, but the standard mm-hmm. is getting a DPT, doctorate in physical therapy.
Mm-hmm. So 4 years plus.
Plus another three.
Wow, so every physical therapist that I see Some of these people that I see, they look 25 years old.
I know. They've been going to school, but they...
Is that true?
It's just, they're there. I mean, they're working hard.
You know, without getting into the figures, is the money good for a physical therapist?
I don't know any rich physical therapists.
Yeah, is that okay. True?
Okay. There may be a few, but they're not treating patients.
Right, okay. And it involves, since I've been probably, I don't know, maybe half a dozen physical therapy sessions in my lifetime, of maybe four or five. I went to Sierra Nevada Hospital for a back class because I blew out a disc. And a couple of knee surgeries, shoulder surgery, just you name it. I've been there.
Right.
So a lot of it, there is some massage involved in some particular cases, correct?
Right.
Okay, manipulation where they kind of move you around, stretch.
Yes, and a lot. And our office specializes in manual therapy, lots of different kinds of it, moving joints in ways to improve their function.
Okay. Yeah.
Our soft tissue.
Any nutrition or acupuncture used?
No.
Okay.
In California, no, specifically for the acupuncture. Some states, that's authorized, and I have worked in Arizona where my boss was an acupuncturist as well.
Okay.
So you have to be an acupuncturist license for that. Nutrition, not generally. We're not really trained in that, so I'm not giving a lot of nutritional advice.
Sure. Is there any continuing education you have to take? I have to take
all the time.
30 hours a year on all sorts of all the licenses that I have, but they're financial licenses.
It's required in by law, and it's also required professionally if you just want to be a good physical therapist. Like I said, it's changing all the time. And we have educational classes in our own office for our therapists that we do routinely. Once a month, we have an ongoing training.
What's the regulatory body over you?
It's the state of California.
Okay.
And there's a... I can't remember exactly the name of it, but it's a licensing agency, Department of something in the state of California. Well, I'll have to be licensed.
Okay. And there's a regulatory body over it. Do they watch the physical therapy or the firm that you work for? Or all the above?
I think they are looking at individual complaints. So if complaints come in, they're going to investigate those. The firm also as well.
Okay. And... if it's injury and then aging, do you get anybody with growing pains? You get kids? You come in for no particular reason?
Usually there's a reason, okay?
Blew out something? Or...
Something's going on, okay?
Yeah.
Physically, or maybe they just haven't not developing in their proper way. But growth pain is probably a misnomer. We got to look at all the possible causes, physical, mental, you know, what do they do?
A lot of surgeries, right?
We see a lot of post-surgical patients, orthopedic stuff particularly.
Are all physical therapists familiar with all parts, or is there like a D-guy? And I imagine for all the years you've been doing it, you're okay to treat just about anything that's coming along, right?
I don't know and not skilled in pelvic floor issues.
Okay.
I am not a therapist that is really in working with post-stroke patients. That's
A
subspecialty.
Okay.
You know, so there we all have our areas of expertise, but we also have our limitations as well.
Is there a particular a certification for working with strokes or working with people that maybe, are ill in another way?
There is a, within the American Physical Therapy Association, there is a something called orthopedic clinical specialist. And we can become a clinical specialist in various areas. I'm a clinical specialist in orthopedics or in times past. In other areas, it could be neurology. It could be women's health. Okay. It could be sports medicine. So those are tested. You have it's like becoming board certified in orthopedics as an orthopedic physician.
Okay. And your area especially, once again, is?
Orthopedics. Okay.
Knee, ankle, foot, wrist, neck.
You got it.
Back.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, jaw, TMJ.
Jaw, right. Yeah. Okay. And finally, without mentioning numbers, there are private physical therapists, and then there are physical therapists that work with firms. Is that true? For myself, if I'm in a financial advisor, I have to be employed by a firm. And if as an insurance agent, I have to have an agency that I work for. Is it the same with you, or can you be on your own?
You can be on your own. I have been on my own, have mm-hmm. had my own private practice, mm-hmm. and you can also work as a consultant and sits different for different industries. Mm-hmm. And there's a large number of physical therapists in private practice.
Mm-hmm.
However, now I work for a physical therapist that is a private practice owned by John Sievert.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have a staff of about, at least track, I think we have 7 physical therapists in the okay. office there.
Okay, good. All right. Okay, so finally, why are you retiring? Just had enough? Or?
You know, I enjoy physical therapy. I've done it for a long time. My wife says, you have a lot to offer yet. Says, yeah, but I like to play.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I also get involved in a lot of volunteer situations.
Okay.
I'm heavily involved in search mm-hmm. and rescue. And I'm an avid outdoors. I'm an outdoors nut.
Yeah, so you understand what people are going through that way.
Yes.
But if somebody comes to you with cerebral palsy or one of those, that's a different type of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, so that's a neurological stroke, yeah. area and something I don't have a lot of skill in. So mm-hmm. I would refer them to another physical therapist who does.
Okay, okay. I see. All right. Well, this is Mark Cunaberti on Money Matters. We're in the offshoot investing community speaking to Jack Emery. Physical therapy for 44 years. Congratulations on your retirement. Are you going to just give it up? Or are you going to do it on part-time or play it by ear?
I'm part-time now, so mm-hmm. I'm winding down all the way.
Okay, all right. And Jack's number 530-272-7306, 530-272-7306, Jack Emery. Jack, you want to add anything before I let you go?
Physical therapy is a great career. Mm-hmm. It's growing. If you want to get into it, I encourage it. But it's hard to get into physical therapy because
there's
a lot of competition to get into schools.
Okay.
And so that makes it sometimes discouraging because of the difficulty to get in there. Although we have 2 physical therapy students that are applying to school, are almost accepted to school now.
Okay, but you got to go 4 years at a university.
Oh, they already have their bachelor's.
Yeah, then you got to go to a private physical therapy school.
Right.
Okay.
And they're accredited throughout the nation.
Okay, 3 years.
3 years.
3 years.
Sounds like fun.
And they got to pay, I guess, can you get any financial aid for that? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
But it's expensive.
All right. So, Jack, I want to thank for coming in today.
You're
it
welcome.
It was a pleasure. And again, Jack's phone number, 530-272-7306. Jack L. Emery, retiring physical therapist, but we'll still take your call, right? All right, we'll be right back on Money Matters. My name's Mark Cunaberti. Stay tuned. right. So the market's down up 50 after a fairly brutal 2 days because of the GDP quarterly figures that came out. That came out 2 days ago, and it came in at 47. 50 is no contraction, no expansion. The official definition of a recession, and, you know, I say it's 3/4, but, you know, I'm looking on the web here. It must have been changed because they're saying that it's 2/4 of contraction. I'm pretty sure it's 3, but, you know, who am I to argue with? Google, right? Okay. So the question has been asked, are we going into a recession? Well, you know, by the official term, you know, the 2/4 of contraction, we've got 1 already. I think it's 3 myself. Now, I guess it would be, what's the definition of a depression? Okay, a depression. And when you think of depression, you think, wow, that's pretty serious. And a recession is pretty nasty, but a depression is worse. A depression is, you know, the typical recession is something that lasts for 6 months or more, which is economic contraction. My definition is 3/4, but a depression... you know, the definition is a little gray. A recession that lasts for 18 months could be categorized as a recession, as a depression. Now, there's been 33 recessions, 2/4 of contracting GDP, 2/4 of contracting GDP since 1854. Doesn't sound like a lot. How many depressions have there been? Well, you know, there's been a handful. But depression is just an extended recession that has years of economic contraction. And obviously, it's more severe during a recession. Unemployment generally will be fairly nasty in a depression. Housing prices will turn down. And you will see deflation in overall pricing. So I think to say that a depression is on the horizon is a far stretch, you know. But, of course, we really never know. So it's going to be interesting, you know. If one caveat would be that if the recession does rear its ugly head because we get another 1/4 or 2 of economic contraction. Remember, GDP's got to be below 50 to signify contraction. If we get another couple of quarters of contracting numbers, GDP below the number of 50, I think a lot of it will be attributed to the tariffs. So I guess you could say that's a Washington-made recession, right? I guess you could say that. Anyway, there's still, you know, I could show you 15 articles that show you that a recession is coming, and I even could show you 15 more that saying the depression is coming, and I could show you 15 more that saying no way it's happening, and 15 more that said the stock market's going to 30,000. So I do get a lot of articles sent to me. Guys will read an article, and it'll be rather, you know, brain-jarring. It will be a very effectively written article, and they'll send it to me, and they'll say, see, a recession is coming, or see, the market's going to 30,000. But again, I've seen articles that are right on, spot on, and whatever they prognosticated happened, and I've seen articles that were just way off the mark. Nothing ever happened. So we'll see. The inverted yield curve has kind of normalized, so it is kind of maintained an upward slope. Basically, that means that if you buy a 2-year bond, you're going to get less interest than if you buy a 10-year bond. And the difference between the 2 and the 10-year bond is what people look at. So let's say you were getting 3% to buy a 2-year CD and you were getting 1 3/4 to buy a 10-year CD. It doesn't really sound very logical. That's what an inverted yield curve is that the return you get on a longer investment, a guaranteed investment, is lower than what you would get on a short-term investment. So we're going to see what happens. We're going to be watching the markets. So you don't have to, as I always say. Dow up 60. We'll see. You know, I'm reading on Yahoo Finance. You know, Dow 30,000 is a strong possibility, and recession right around the corner, et cetera, et cetera. So, like I said, nobody can predict where the market is going to go. Nobody. Now, we got an article out from Yahoo saying, forget the Dow sell-off. Dow 30,000 is in sight. That's from Alexis Christoforis, an anchor at Yahoo Finance. So, you know, what does that really mean, right? That's just an opinion. And, you know, so never panic. You know, we have stops that we hit when the market starts to turn. And, you know, but that's just the way how I gauge it. So we'll see. Anyway, we did cover a couple of weeks back something that was happening in two various markets. The article I put out was called "The Smart Money is Hoarding Cash." So we've been looking at ominous sounding news headlines like yield conversion, coming recession, spiking interest rates in the U.S., which are now started down again. But what was also fairly not publicized so much was that the rich, whoever they are, or as they're called, are supposedly hoarding cash in significant amounts. CNBC reports spending that those that can spend on such things, really high value things, have reduced their buying of real estate, jewelry, retail stores, toys such as boats and classic cars, to name a few. Reports have it that the middle class is still spending, but they more looked at indicator for some is when the very rich stop buying or at least slow down their toy and discretionary spending and start banking cash. That could spell bad things ahead. So we've got a few things. You know, we've got an inverted yield curve that inverted a while ago. We have contracting GDP, and now the rich are hoarding cash again. This doesn't mean anything absolute. It's just things that we look at, right? You could see clouds in the sky and wind and dark, and it might not rain. Some instances, CNBC points out, as luxury retailer Barney's filed for bankruptcy. And Nordstrom saw three straight quarterly declines in sales. Manhattan real estate over 1.5 million have seen sales fall 5% during the second quarter of 2019. That out from Redfin. And playgrounds for the rich and famous like Aspen and the Hamptons are seeing similar and anemic results compared to past years. $1 million and up automobiles. Do you have any of those? I don't. Another favorite toy, the super rich, are also finding the same lack of exuberance, my words there. Art auctions are down 10% at Sotheby's and a stunning 22% at Christie's from a year ago. I would imagine few of you would lose sleep or shed tears over such facts that the rich are not spending as much. But the recent pullback in the spending of their wealth can be an indicator of something that will have farther-reaching effects that drop sales figures at the mom-and-pop stores. Exotic retailers, definitely, from CNBC, are seeing reduced sales. And toy sellers, you know, what we call toys, not like Mattel, but toys like big cars and boats and yachts and things. The top 10% of earners amount for about half of consumer spending. That's from Moody Analytics. And if that's the case, when the rich stop spending, overall economic performance may start to suffer. When they're not spending, what are they doing? They're stockpiling cash. Yeah. While middle-income people have picked up some of the overall slack by continuing to spend, slowing job growth, if it happens, could affect that as well. Now, the rich also own the lion's share of stocks, with 80% of stocks attributed to a high-income group, to the high-income group. They also own the majority of large businesses and businesses that export, so local businesses, regional, national, and in businesses that sell to other countries. Obviously, tariffs, the talk of the town. A tariff war could combine with an overall business slowdown and lagging stock market, giving the super rich yet another reason to close their wallets. We don't know, but it is an interesting factoid. Although few in numbers comparatively, the rich do control a large proportion of wealth. And when that wealth stops moving or even slows down, history shows that so can the general economy and the rest of us with it. So we'll see what happens. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, and we'll be right back.
and some days pass on by. I'll be working here forever, at least until I die. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. I'm supposed to get a raise next week, you know that when I won't. Cause I'm working for a living. Hey, I'm not complaining cause I really need to work. But hitting up my buddies got me feeling like a jerk. $100 car note, $200 rent. I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. Working for a living. Cause I'm working for a living.
All right. So from CNBC, from Bloomberg, we have a Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago President Charles Evans on Yahoo Finance. Today's day.
Push lower and lower. And lower.
The this is Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago President Charles Evans.
Target. Is that a concern?
I'm very concerned about the inflation outlook. As a matter of fact, I would have argued this spring that even before I was nervous about economic headwinds, there was a good argument for more accommodative monetary policy just to ensure that we get inflation up to 2%. I think we should be overshooting 2% at this point in the economic cycle. We've underrun 2% for quite a long time. We've indicated that our objective is symmetric. We should spend time above 2% as well.
Now, see, what he's talking about there is the Fed is targeting 2% inflation, and when they get really worried, they want it higher. So, you know, the opinions are out. Is inflation good? Well, inflation, erodes your purchasing power. But the Fed has pretty much adopted a policy of 2% inflation or more. So we'll listen more to Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago President Charles Evans.
Well, it's below 2%. We should be averaging 2%. We've had trouble getting to 2%. We haven't averaged 2%. So I think if we took actions to ensure that we overshot 2%, yeah. 2.25%, even 2.5% is not really a challenge given symmetry of our objective, then you would be more assured that you would get to 2% if you found headwinds. So if you try to aim higher and then you're knocked down a little bit, at least you could get to 2%.
Yeah. So do you think monetary policy, therefore, needs to be even more accommodative, given kind of where we are now, given where break-evens are, and given where they're signaling that we're going to go?
Well, that's a, you know, that's a dangerous question for Charles Evans to answer, you know, whether he's going to loosen up on the money supply or not. I would imagine he's probably, I have not heard this interview, but I imagine he's going to dance around this a little bit. Let's see what he says.
So I put all of these considerations into the mix, and, you know, I've got, you know, those two reasons, that inflation has been underperforming, as well as the risk management aspect. Even though the unemployment rate's 3.7%, even though I'm looking for trend growth, I think the headwinds are stronger than I was expecting earlier in the year and late last year. That also argues for the accommodative moves that we've made. I'm going to go into the meeting, listen to everyone's perspectives, firm up my own about the outlook for the economy, and ask myself, do we really, you know, do we need still more accommodative monetary policy to achieve these objectives, assuming that we are still going to be able to navigate the more minor shocks that are going to come our way over the next 6 to 18 months?
All right. Accommodative monetary policy. What he's talking about there is lowering interest rates. They have two big tools, lowering interest rates and quantitative easing. Okay, they're two different tools. Well, lowering interest rates basically just lower the overnight lending rate. They dropped it 0.25% a couple of weeks ago. And so if he's talking about accommodative stances, he's talking about lowering interest rates further. And quantitative easing. Now, what's quantitative easing? Well, quantitative easing is when the Fed's normally kept about $800 billion worth of treasuries and what we call agency debt in their warehouse. Agency debt might be mortgage-backed securities and maybe some student loans and maybe some car loans. Or usually it's just mortgage-backed securities from people like Fannie Mae, entities like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Jenny Mae. And they normally run about $800 billion. Now, when 08 and 09 came by, the banks and, you know, hedge funds and pension plans. They had a lot of this these mortgages, and they couldn't sell them, you know. They just couldn't offer them to raise cash, and there was no buyers. Everybody was selling. So they were selling for less than par. Par means if you have a $100,000 mortgage you want to sell, you're selling it for less than 100 grand, right? So quantitative easing is when the Fed comes in and they basically create funds, create money, and they go to what we call the primary dealers. There's 24 primary dealers. They're large institutional financial institutions and banks. And they basically go to them, and or the banks go to them, go to the feds and say, look, we got all these mortgages we can't sell. So will you buy them? And the feds give them money and take in these loans. Let's just call it debt. And the money goes into the banking system because the Fed buys from the bank. And then the banking system either lends it out or, you know, funnels it into the stock market or whatever they do with it. What they do with it is, you know, manyfold. But basically when the Fed buys these loans, this debt from the agencies, from the banks and institutions and the primary dealers, more money goes into the system. And that's what we call accommodative. And that's what they call quantitative easing. Means a lot of buying. So the Fed's balance sheet, what it had prior to 08 and 09, was about $800 billion. They ballooned it to about $4.5 trillion, $5 trillion. Last year, they tried to unload some of it. They say, well, we got, you know, $4 trillion worth of loans here that we bought. Paper. And so they try to unload it. So they go to the primary dealers and they say, you're going to buy some of this stuff back. So they unwound about $700 billion. They basically sold back $700 billion worth of this debt to the banks, which takes money out of the system. And they did that last year over a variety of programs, and then they stopped. They were unwinding the balance sheet. So it went from $4 trillion to about $3.8 trillion, if my figures are right. And then all this happens in what they call the repurchase agreement markets. And basically that's called the overnight market. And so what's happened just in the last couple of weeks, we did a little article on it and did some, did a show on it, on a partial show on it, is that the Feds basically now went back a couple of weeks ago and continuing to, now they went back and started buying it back again. So they try to unload $700 billion, force it back into the institutions and banks, this debt, when they took in cash. Now they're reversing that again. That market that they do that in experienced some stress, and so they went back in and bought back. I think the figure now is somewhere around $200 billion that they bought back of the $700 billion they just plowed into them. Now they bought it back. So does that signify bad things to come? It's tough to say. You know, the tariffs are taking a bite. You know, they really are taking a bite, and so we're going to see what happens. You know, there are some things that are concerning to this analyst. I don't have my all-out crash helmet on, but as I mentioned before, and the regulator is okay. It's okay for me to say we did go a little bit more conservative stance in some of the portfolios, based on my opinion. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell or a recommendation to buy or sell. Just my opinion. I cannot tell where the market's going to go any more than anyone else. So, but that's just what I did, and we'll see if that's a good move. You know, there have been times when I've gone to more cash. Or more conservative stances in the market continue to run. And there are other times when I've been right. So I guess that's the key to everything, right? Okay. So we'll see what happens. The market is up 62. We don't know what's going to happen. There's going to be some job figures coming out. Some of the things going on, GM, you know, they got a strike going on. There's a jobbers report coming out, you know. There is a news headline on Yahoo that says stocks erase sharp losses. I don't see that. I mean, it's only up 60, and it's down about 1,200 in 2 days. So I don't know why it says stocks erase sharp losses. I guess you could say that the velocity of the fall has abated for now. But I don't know about stocks erased what they lost in the last 2 days.
Oh, hold on a minute. There we go.
So in any case. When I change pages on the computer, that goes into autoplay, and I've got the computer scrolled up. So sorry about that. So anyway, that's the story. So we'll see what happens. We'll follow the market so we don't have to. We'll keep an eye on the repo market. We'll keep an eye on the rich hoarding cash. We'll keep an eye on the next GDP figure. That'll be out in about 2 months, 3 weeks, because it just came out a couple of days ago, and we'll see. Okay. So watching the market so you don't have to, right? Okay. So you're listening to Money Matters, show number 295, Falling in the Fall. Will the markets continue to fall? I'd like to thank Jack L. Emery, physical therapist, for coming on the show. Talk about investing in community, investing in your body. Thank you very much, Jack. His number again, 530-272-7306. My name is Mark Cunaberti, and remember, discussions in this show should not be absolutely not construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge's station, its staff, management, underwriters, and any indices I might have mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com, where everything is free and all past shows are available on there, down to back to about show 200, I think, somewhere in there. That's it. So have a great day. Go make some money. My name is Mark. Thanks for listening.